KALW.
From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
I'm from the Excelsior.
West Portal.
Potrero Hill.
I'm from the Bayview.
Coming up, we'll see how modern-day policing was shaped by a Berkeley police chief at the turn of the century.
How do you, on the one hand, set up a police department that is modeled like a military, and on the other hand, getting people to accept them?
Revisiting the legacy of August Vollmer. Then an East Bay artist and printmaker tells us what's great about small presses and zine publishing.
Everyone just wants everyone to be happy with what they're making and, like, help each other get it out into the world.
And from one of our high school reporters, we'll hear a story about the dangers of feeding California black bears.
They tend to go into areas where human beings are, because where humans are, there is food.
That's all coming up today on Cross Currents. Stay with us. When it comes to police reform, the nation is divided. It's political. The Black Lives Matter movement wants to end police brutality and racial profiling by law enforcement. Meanwhile, some Blue Lives Matter supporters say the rise in ambush-style police killings demonstrate there's an ongoing war on cops. But if you really want to understand the divide, you got to go back in time. At the turn of the 20th century, no one of any political persuasion trusted the police. The city of Berkeley's first police chief, August Vollmer, decided to change that. Vollmer is known as the father of American policing. So what you think of Vollmer's legacy may depend on what you think of modern police. KLW's Holly J. McDeed has more on this local legend who's being honored with a museum exhibit in Berkeley.
To some activists, nothing screams police militarization quite like Urban Shield. Urban Shield is this huge training exercise where emergency first responders from around the world act out dangerous scenarios like earthquakes and terrorist attacks. It's like the Olympics of being a policeman. And this controversial event has taken place in the Bay Area every year since 2007. During a Berkeley City Council meeting in spring 2017, activists demanded the city's police department withdraw from participating in Urban Shield. People like Sagnictha Salazar with the Stop Urban Shield Coalition say the training program teaches police to view community members as enemy combatants.
What we do know is that the police agencies, whether you talk about Oakland or Berkeley, are in constant war with our people.
But the Berkeley Police Department has also faced scrutiny for not being assertive enough. In April 2017, pro-Trump demonstrators and counter-protesters clashed in Berkeley. Independent journalist Luke Rudkowski described the scene in a YouTube video.
This is insane. The police are literally just standing around, not doing anything.
Ironically, the authoritative militaristic cop and the respectful hands-off officer both have the same roots. At the turn of the 20th century, Berkeley's first police chief, August Vollmer, transformed law enforcement into the professional field it is today.
August Vollmer was a household name. He was well known before J. Edgar Hoover ever was.
Willard Oliver is a retired cop, criminal justice professor, and the author of a new book, August Vollmer, The Father of American Policing. Before Vollmer took the helm in 1905, law enforcement basically governed the criminal underworld, protecting drug lords and brothel owners. If you were a criminal and wanted to turn your crime into big business, you would pay the police to have your back.
The black market kind of, you know, institutions, prostitution, gambling casinos, opium dens in Berkeley, they were allowed to run as long as they paid graft to the police department, or, you know, at the time, the town marshal.
So when Vollmer, the humble letter carrier, ran for town marshal, he vowed to change that. Once elected, he went after the opium lords and made more surprising changes, like, for instance, putting his officers on bicycles.
The 1890s was the decade of the bicycle craze. And so bicycles were popular, but, you know, nobody thought about using them for policing.
He organized the first police motorcycle patrol, and eventually he had his officers drive around in cars. He was also the first chief to have his officers communicate by radio. He only had a sixth grade education, but he valued intellect. Borrowing a technique from the military, he tested the IQs of his officers, but his police kept failing the tests.
And so he started recruiting. He put an ad in the UC Berkeley's newspaper saying, asking for college students who wanted basically a part-time, full-time job where they could work at night and attend classes during the day. And so that became the college cops.
That's one reason Vollmer is best known as a champion of education in law enforcement. Another is that he helped develop the nation's first criminology department at UC Berkeley, where police officers took classes on policing. But Vollmer's first major test on the job came during the 1906 earthquake.
By midday on April 19th, 250,000 were homeless. Over 3,000 were dead. But that was only the beginning. The city would burn for another 2 days.
Tens of thousands of people fled the devastation in San Francisco and moved to Berkeley. So Chief Vollmer asked Spanish-American War veterans to temporarily serve as police officers to help maintain the peace.
So he temporarily deputized them, and they started policing the refugee tent areas and the town. And then what was really funny was some of the Civil War veterans were like, hey, what about us? So he deputized them too.
Tony Platt, a professor who taught in the criminology department Vollmer helped develop at UC Berkeley, says Vollmer was a leader in a national effort to reform police. And in doing so, Platt says, Vollmer helped birth what we refer to today as the war on crime.
So here's Vollmer reflecting back on his years in the police department. He said, for years, I've studied military tactics and used them to good effect, rounding up crooks. After all, we're conducting a war against the enemies of society, and we must never forget that.
Vollmer helped develop the criminology department at Berkeley to educate police. But by the 60s, radicals and activists were teaching and taking classes in the school, too. And they had a more critical take on law enforcement. The department's criminology professors, like Platt, taught students about the need for police and prison reform.
We worked closely with the Black Panther Party to develop different models of policing, to try to transform policing from being a military type occupation into a public service occupation.
Police before Vollmer were corrupt, but police after Vollmer were tear gassing and clubbing students. Platt says that by militarizing law enforcement, Vollmer created more distance between cops and the people they serve. And during the 60s and 70s, police-community relations were at a breaking point.
Who just played this man? The police are bloody. They're beating him bloody.
It was sort of like, you know, we're on one side, you're on the other. It's a battle. You think it's a war on us. We think it's a war against you. That was very much the attitude.
Berkeley's criminology department was shut down in 1976, but that tension is still there. So there's some irony that the August Vollmer exhibition at the Berkeley Historical Society is located just a few blocks away from where the recent free speech protest took place. When Platt stopped by the exhibition, he thought,
oh, this is where this battle with the right-wing thugs took place a couple of weeks ago. You know, so it's a place where the police are trying to figure out how to deal with these protests currently taking place in Berkeley, and it's right next to this place where you have this exhibition on the history of policing.
Michael Holland, a retired Berkeley police sergeant and founder of the Berkeley Police Department Historical Unit, shows me around an exhibition celebrating August Vollmer.
This section right here basically covers Vollmer's life in Berkeley.
Photographs and newspaper clippings fill the room. One photo shows Vollmer surrounded by children in his neighborhood. They knew him as Uncle Gus.
And there's 11 kids from the neighborhood that are there, with the youngest sitting on his lap and holding a candy box.
Vollmer may have his critics, but Holland says he taught police to be fair to everyone. He would share a drink with newly released inmates, who would sometimes come to Berkeley just to visit him. He was against the death penalty and didn't view drug use as a crime. His legacy is complicated. As an older man and retired cop, Uncle Gus became afflicted with Parkinson's disease and committed suicide in 1955.
He waited until 9 a.m. in the morning because he knew on that day that all the kids here and everyone else in the neighborhood, kid-wise, would be in school. So they didn't have to hear the sound of the gunshot or hear the ambulance and the cops arriving. Right or wrong, that probably tells you a lot about who he was from the standpoint of a caring man.
Vollmer's suicide tainted his legacy, and historians say it's also why few people outside law enforcement remember him today. Historian Willard Oliver says that if Vollmer was still alive, he'd have a lot of questions.
He would probably wonder why there's, you know, so many issues still, that, you know, science and all of the technology and everything hasn't solved it. He would wonder why the police are so involved in the issue of drugs. He'd probably also wonder why the School of Criminology doesn't exist anymore. I'm sure he'd have a lot to say about a lot of things.
If people want to understand what needs to change to improve police-community relations today, August Vollmer might not have all the answers, but he got us started on this path, so studying his legacy is probably a good place to begin. In Berkeley, I'm Holly J. McDeed for Cross Currents.
The August Vollmer exhibition runs through September 23rd. Holly is KALW's justice reporter. If you've got a story you want her to report, shoot her an email at justice@kalw.org. This is Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hannah Baba. East Bay illustrator, painter, and printmaker Sana Khan makes work that spans mediums, but usually revolves around the humorous, fun, and surreal. A recent zine she made, printed by Tiny Splendor, the small press collective she helps run, is called The Urge to Regurge. The tiny booklet is filled with prints of foods, from flan to chow mein, along with a glossary of synonyms for, barf. It's surprisingly cute. Her work can also get more serious, though. Recently, she created a series of paintings called Immigrants Make America Great as part of a group exhibition responding to the 2016 election. The paintings reflect on moments in Khan's Pakistani-American family in rich watercolor and photorealistic detail. Sana Khan spoke with KALW's Jen Chien about making artwork in the Bay.
The solo show that you have up right now at Tara's Ice Cream and Gallery in Oakland, it has a lot of different kind of work. You have a lot of prints, but there's also paintings and zines. And I'd say they range pretty widely stylistically, but I found I could also see a real sense of personality. How would you describe your artistic personality?
I like to make art about things that I find funny and relatable. I like to paint pictures of like fruit with smiley faces on them. I also just like to paint really shiny, colorful things. So like a colorful, bright crab. I guess I try to avoid things that are too conceptual, but at the same time, have my art be about things I care about.
Well, a lot of your work does, to me, it reads whimsical, but there's also some darkness that I sense. There's a recent series of paintings you did that got a little more serious or straightforward. Immigrants Make America Great. So can you talk more about this line for you of sort of serious or straightforward versus more surreal or funny?
I made that series in response to the election results, but I actually wanted to make something I saw as more of a positive reflection of what it means to grow up as a family of immigrants in the U.S. So basically the series is of really colorful, candid shots, and I wanted to paint those really photorealistically and as much for myself as a way of just exploring like my own family's history, but just reflecting it to the public too, like, hey, this is a normal American family. Yeah, it's really personal, but I like I like mixing it up, I guess. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You grew up in San Jose, and you went to college in Santa Cruz. Now you live in the East Bay. Can you tell me about your relationship to the Bay Area and how you think it's affected you as an artist?
Yeah. So I moved to Berkeley from Santa Cruz in 2011, and I was just fresh out of college and wanted to make art and get it out into the world, but it was so incredibly impossible to just get your art into galleries or break into any of that. Me and my friends were finding, so we started just like making our own photocopy zines. Like my friend worked at a copy shop and we would just take advantage there. Yeah. And so we would set up in Dolores Park with like a picnic blanket and sell stuff, or just sell stuff on the street. And we were just doing events constantly, trying to get our work out there. And
And you were selling stuff.
We were actually selling stuff, which was amazing.
And is that the beginning then of Tiny Splendor, the small press collective that you co-run?
Yeah, we've grown into a full-fledged Riso studio space.
Separate from your living space.
Separate from the living space, thankfully. and that's in Berkeley. And it's part of a studio that me and my partner run called Max's Garage Press. So we also focus on traditional lithography, silk screening, etching also. So just the whole gamut of printmaking.
It seems like you also really appreciate community in how you make your work. You started this small press with friends. You work closely with your partner. Tell me a little bit more about that, just how your personal relationships help you as an artist.
I think they help me tremendously. I get so much out of working with others, and you just become more aware of like what other people are putting out, and you're like, oh my God, my friends are so amazing. Like, I have to be extra amazing to keep up with them too.
So that sounds like a good kind of competition. Backbiting art world competition that you hear about sometimes.
Yeah, totally. That's what's great about like small presses and like zine publishing and stuff, is everyone just wants everyone to be happy with what they're making and like help each other get it out into the world. And there's all kinds of presses in the Bay Area that are doing that too. A lot of that comes out of printmaking because it's just such this powerful tool in your hands to be able to say, I control the means of production, and it requires a lot of hard work. But if I do that hard work, I can make something that's really nice and says exactly what I want it to say and put it out into the world, whether it's like a zine about hot dogs, because you know other people like hot dogs too, and they would enjoy seeing these silly illustrations, or it's like something more serious and deep and vulnerable. Whatever that may be. So it's really amazing that so many other people are doing this around here, and lucky to be a part of it.
That was East Bay artist Sana Khan speaking with KALW's Jen Chien. You can see Khan's solo show called Tears of Empathy through the end of the month at Tara's Organic Ice Cream and Gallery in Oakland. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. KALW worked with high school interns this summer, and this week we're playing the stories they produced. California is going through something of a black bear boom right now. At any given moment, there's more than 25,000 black bears roaming the state's forests with their narrow heads, small ears, and tan, brown, and black bellies. But the drought has also increased contact between bears and people. High schooler Casey Chen loves animals and wanted to understand what brought one family of black bears out of the wilderness in Kern County into a zoo in Oakland.
Earlier this summer in Pine Mountain Club, a private community in Kern County, a hungry black bear had been scavenging inside of dumpsters and homes in search of food. Steve Torres, a supervisor with the Wildlife Investigations Lab, an organization that watches over California wildlife, says this mother bear was becoming a local troublemaker.
This bear had gotten into several homes, and the cubs had been following along.
But this pattern, Torres says, wasn't entirely the bear's fault. People had been feeding the bear and her cubs. That's illegal in California and can cause bears to forget how to hunt for their own food. In one incident, the mother bear had wandered into someone's kitchen. The woman inside began banging on pots and pans, and the mother bear freaked out, too.
And the bear swatted her and then ran out of the house, and it put an injury to her arm.
The California Department of Fish and Wildlife, a state natural resource agency, was called in to capture the bear and her cubs. They set up a trap with food.
So the bear climbs into it, gets the food, and trips the trap so a door closes behind it. And that's how the bears are usually caught in California.
Bears that injure or attack humans are usually euthanized. But this time around, the Oakland Zoo offered to take in the mother bear and her cubs. For the first time in California history, a bear who injured a person would avoid euthanasia and live on in a zoo. Now, the bears serve as an education opportunity in the zoo's California Trail exhibit. I am now standing on top of the California Trail exhibit. It rests towards the northeastern side of the zoo as a new expansion that almost doubles the size of the zoo. Though the animals aren't transferred here yet, they will be by the summer of 2018. And this exhibit, the California Trail, is to ensure the future of California's native wildlife. The bears are hidden from the public for now, but there's lots of videos of them online. You can even watch the happy bear family playing in ice. One of the goals of the exhibit is to educate people about black bears and why it's important not to feed them. But there's at least one woman in California who doesn't think bears are so cute.
Hello?
Hello?
Yes, Casey?
Yeah.
Hi, Elena here.
Elena Hansen lives in Kern County, where bears are common.
They're not the little, care bears. They're not the Charmin toilet paper bears. They will eat you. They will kill you. They will hurt your children. They'll hurt your pets. They're fun to watch, and they have their place.
Nearly a decade ago, Hansen was attacked by a black bear.
I was working on my ranch and looked around, and about 20 feet away was a bear staring at me.
The bear leapt at her, grabbed her by the ears, and bit into her head.
Quite frankly, I got angry. I got really mad. I thought of all the people who would take great pleasure in my grisly death. I thought of all the, the small-minded hypocrites in town down below me. And I just thought, damn it, bear, do you know who I am? You can't do this to me.
She then jabbed the bear's eyes and called for her two dogs to fight it off, traveling almost 5 miles down the mountain to get medical help. She says bear attacks are rare, but there's been more and more encounters recently where she lives. One reason is because the drought has made it harder for bears to find food.
They tend to go into areas where human beings are because where humans are, there is food. And it's just a short step from humans having food to humans being food, as I discovered.
But Steve Torres with the California Wildlife Agency says it's not always fair to blame the bears. The black bears at the Oakland Zoo, for example, only began wandering into people's homes because they were used to people feeding them.
And so a lot of the conflicts that come up with wildlife and with bears in this case aren't so much problems with bears, they're problems with people.
Torres says there won't always be room in zoos for all the California bears considered dangerous.
It's becoming harder and harder to place bears in zoos because they're full of bears. But there may be a time where we have to actually euthanize animals because there is, not a place for them. But fortunately, that hasn't happened yet. But we can see that a bit on the horizon.
Now, the responsibility falls to the Oakland Zoo to use these bears as a way to educate the public about the dangers of getting too close to wildlife, ironically, by bringing the bears face-to-face with people. Remember, black bears are usually shy, not dangerous. But please, don't feed them. For KALW, I'm Casey Chen.
Casey Chen was one of our high school interns this summer. She is a student at Philip and Sala Burton High School in San Francisco. The rest of our team today includes China Armstrong, Nina Gensler-Debs, Gabe Graben, Raquel Maria Dillon, Marina Poole, Stephen Short, Judy Silber, and Corinne Smith. Our show is engineered by James Rollins. The line producer is Hannah Kingsley-Ma. Jen Chien is our managing editor. Ben Trefney is our news director. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.